Okay, good evening, everybody. Welcome back to our learning at Share. I hope that everyone had a meaningful and uplifting Shavuos. Zman Matan Torah Seinu. I said to my family a couple times, Orientif, it feels so weird. Like, Pesach's like a month, and Sukkot is for sure at least 2 weeks with all the preparation. Pesach, so many shilas and kashering and cleaning and shopping and cooking and organizing. Even Sukkos, you have to plan the meals and the guests and who's coming when and the decorating, Baruch Hashem. And then Shavuos just like comes and goes. So I hope everyone had a meaningful Yom Tov and an enjoyable Yom Tov as well. We are learning L'Ilui Nishmasa and L'Zecher Nishmasa, Miriam Fun, Miriam Bas Chaim Yitzhak, Allah HaShalom. May her neshama have a continuous aliyah in the schus of the Torah that we will share this evening together. So we are actually going back into the Sefer. I got to the Medrash that I wanted to speak about last time. But how we understand the suffering. And if you remember, we looked at two different pieces from Medras Bereishis Rabba, the pottery worker who has two different kinds of vases, which one will he hit? The flax maker, which flax will he hit to beat into linen? The cow, which one will carry the heavy burden? And we understood it according to the Emek Dava, the Nitziv, as a parable for understanding why and how Hashem tests the righteous. So we are going back into the Sefer. We are in Sefer, the second set of Bilvavi Mishkan Evna, the English adaptation of Building a Sanctuary in the Heart. I'm on page 239 of the second Sefer. Okay. Hashem's kindness is beyond our comprehension. That is what the subheading is called. We're in the chapter called Removing Obstacles to Conditional Love. And we're in the chapter called Hashem's kindness is beyond our comprehension. Okay. David HaMelech said in Tehillim, okay, Tzadi Beis, how great are your works, Hashem? Your thoughts are extremely deep. An empty person cannot grasp this. A fool is incapable of understanding this. So Hashem's works are so great. His thoughts, kaviyachal, are extremely deep. An empty person cannot grasp this. A fool is incapable of understanding the ways of God. We will now provide an example for what it means that we cannot understand the ways of Hashem, but the point is much deeper than the example, and it's a really very useful example. Sometimes I have found that over the years, even though we have Baruch Hashem learned so much, and we bring on many outside sources, sometimes I struggle with some of the teachings in the Sefer in understanding them as he writes them. It happens to be that the following mashal is excellent, and I really find that it brings home the point very, very strongly. Here we go. This is a mashal. A young child is in the kitchen. He goes to the cabinet and he takes out a bottle of bleach. You remember when those Tide Pods first came out? There was a problem because they said that some kids got a hold of them and they thought they were some sort of candy and they ate them and they ingested them. He goes to the cabinet, he takes out a bottle of bleach. He wants to put his finger in the bleach and then he wants to put the finger in his mouth. His father sees what's happening and he quickly runs and he grabs forcibly the bottle away from the child before he has a chance to drink the bleach. The child then bursts into tears. If he is 2 years old, this child, he is very insulted. Why? Something was taken away from him. The father who takes it away knows he is doing a very big kindness for this child and taking away the bleach. But the child himself does not understand why he's being treated this way. He's thirsty. It's a hot day. He sees clear liquid. Why can't he drink it? The example seems clear. So it seems pretty obvious that the father is doing a chesed for the child. And even though the child is angry and upset and he wants to drink the bleach, obviously the father is saving his life by taking something away from him. But he's going to add another dimension that's even deeper. This example seems clear, but we must contemplate the depth contained in it and the difference between prior lessons, he says, and this lesson. Until now, we have worked with the assumption that Hashem's kindness is within our comprehension. On some degree, in some way, you'll be able to understand Hashem's plan, whether it's today, whether it's tomorrow, whether it's in a year, whether it is in 10 years. At some point, we think it's within our comprehension. But we only think we lack the details to give us proper perspective. If we would only know all the details, we say, whether in 20 years or from a previous Gilgal, transmigration of the souls, we could understand. That's what we think. We would be able to understand the ways of Hashem if we could see all the picture. Let's say we had the viewpoint of a previous Gilgal, okay? Where was our soul before it was in this body? It's something that we mentioned a few weeks ago from a Sefer by Rabbi Natanael Wiederblank. If you remember, he says, B'Yemos HaMashiach, who's going to come back? The Gilgal, the reincarnation that was most successful in bringing the Neshama to Tikkun. So whether from 20 years ago or from a previous Gilgal, we could understand. But since I only see my life, And I don't know where my neshama was before, and I don't know where it was before that, so I'm missing details. So since he mentioned Gilgal, I want to share two things that I learned, one last week and one over Yom Tov, that relate to this discussion. So I'm first quoting a short piece from Rabbi Yisachar Friend. A sefer is called The Power of Avor. I quoted it last week in a different shir. I'm not quoting everything I quoted last week, just a short excerpt from it. In Parshas Bamidbar, which was just read this past Shabbos, Bamidbar is also known as Sefer HaPikudim, the Book of Counting. That's why Bamidbar doesn't translate it as desert, but the fourth book of Torah is known as Numbers. That's because Moshe took account of the people in the desert. So the Pasuk says, Su'u es rosh kol adas b'nei Yisrael. I'll take a census of the heads of the assembly of Israel, the Mishpachosam, according to their families, the base of Osam, according to their father's house, b'mispar shemos, according to the number of names, Kol Zachar, every male, Ligul Gilosam. Right. According to their headcount. Now you might notice that the word Ligul Gilosam, so Rashi says Bekalo Gogolas, you take a half shekel, you don't count how many people there are when you go around the table, you count by a half shekel, we shouldn't have Einhar. Right. Today we count according to Hoshia Samech, Ovarachas Nachal Sacher, Umein Venasim An Ha'olam. It's the last pasuk of Peruch of Ches of Tehillim. I think it was made much more famous than it ever was after the Patira of Rabbi Dr. Abim J. Twersky, Zatzal. But the pasuk says, how shall you count them? Kol Zachar, every male, Ligul Gilosam, according to their head count. But it's a strange word. Rabbi Yisachar Friend says, he quotes the Ramah Mipeno. The word Ligul Gilosam alludes to the esoteric concept of Gilgul Hanashamos, the transmigration of souls. So when it says Moshe counted them, Kol Zachar, every male, Ligul Gilosam, according to their head count, there's a reference here to Gilgul Hanashamos, the transmigration of the souls. The Ramah Mipeno explains, Moshe didn't merely count the people who were there at that time in front of him, the door of the Yotzei Mitzrayim, the generation who had left Egypt, through Ruach HaKodesh, divine inspiration. He was able to see into the future. How many times each soul that he was counting, each neshama in that sentence, would return to the world. He was able to count every transmigration of the soul in the person that stood before him. He counted every gilgul of that neshama. And says Rav Friend, although I generally shy away from discussing nistar, the hidden topics of Torah, the Ramah Mipeno's explanation provides a vital message for all of us. Specifically for people facing challenges in their life. It's so relevant for our share. First of all, I hope not. And my father's a lawyer, he should live and be well. And the 11th Dibra was in my house, was thou shall not assume. Okay? Not exactly, but almost. But I assume that everyone on this share, on this Zoom, I thank you all very much for joining me. And anyone listening to the share on YU Torah is facing some sort of challenge in their life. I hope not. I hope I'm wrong. And it is an assumption. No, I should say more, it's an educated guess. I think even assumption is the wrong word. I think I'm going to say it's an educated guess that we are all facing some degree of challenge right now, today, in our lives. And Rav Yisachar Fran writes, the name of Ramah Mipeno, that this is a very important concept, that Moshe didn't only count those who were before him, he counted every Gilgal of that neshama. Why is it so important? Says Rav Fran, the Kabbalists teach that nowadays neshamas are generally not visiting the world for the first time. It's so weird to think, where was my neshama before me? Almost all souls have been here previously. That's what he writes. And when they passed on to the next world, they were sent back here for another sojourn in this world. Why does this happen? Says Rav Fran, each neshama has a tachlis, a specific tafkid, a mission that only that soul can carry out. Only when it fulfills its full mission can it reach the highest level of Olam Haba, the world to come. Since Hashem wants to afford the neshama, the soul, the greatest opportunity to bask in the glory of the Shekhinah, he sends any neshama that failed to complete its mission back to Olam Haza to try again. This can happen two times, it could happen three times, it could happen more times. Moshe was able to see how many of these transmigrations each neshama would go through. Why, says Rabbi Friend, is it important for everyone to know about Gilgal Neshamos? And it's a good question. Why do I need to know about this? If Rabbi Friend doesn't speak about the Nistar, Michal Horowitz certainly doesn't speak about the Nistar, but yet I'm quoting him. Why is it important for everyone to know about this Gilgal Neshamos? There are certain times in our lives when we just cannot understand why certain things happen in this world. if there's a better sentence that sums up our learning of the past 2 to 3 months, I don't know what it is. You know, coming off of the COVID year, and then there were the vaccine rollout. And so we thought, oh, maybe, you know, things were going to like be calming down. I'm not talking about in your personal lives, I mean in general. And then as the world started to emerge, then Mayrone, the disaster of a few weeks ago, which shook us all horribly to the core. And the matzav in Eretz Yisrael today, I don't mean today like the second, I mean the past couple of weeks, is a very difficult, very frightening. And I'm sure that you have all seen that there are pro-Palestinian riots around the world. In LA, they beat up a group of Jews at a kosher restaurant. In Toronto, they severely beat an older Jewish man. There have been protests in Brooklyn. What's bad for the Jews in one place is bad for the Jews in another place. And if we think that we can remove ourselves from the matzav and it has nothing to do with me, well, unto us, we're very wrong. And we're seeing now a situation, again, to quote a friend, there are times in our lives when we just cannot understand why certain things happen in this world. And then Erev Shavuos, there was another disaster. I remember when Mayrone first happened, we thought the bleachers collapsed. Then we found that it wasn't the bleachers collapsed. And now in Stalin, in Eretz Yisrael Shavuos, the bleachers taka did collapse. A 13-year-old boy was killed. He was just bar mitzvah Pesach, a 23-year-old father. My gosh, you look at the world, you say, what is going on? Okay, we thought we're coming out of the COVID year. And then Mayrone and the war in Eretz Yisrael, 55-year-old man was killed Erev Shavuos. He couldn't make it to the shelter in time. A 5-year-old boy in the south who was in the shelter and shrapnel pierced the window. A man in Lod was just buried. He was hit in the head with bricks the Tuesday before. What's going on, you wonder? There are times in our lives we just cannot understand, says Rafran, why things happen in this world. Quote, not Michards. Listen, why do some people suffer so much while others seem to cruise effortlessly through their lives? Why do children die? I'm quoting. Why do young married people suddenly become ill and leave behind a spouse and little children? We have we moved almost 4 years ago, a neighbor from our previous block. My husband went to elementary school with him. He was diagnosed Erev Pesach and his levaya was last week. He was 45 years old. His eldest child is in 12th grade and his youngest is 3 years old. What, do you understand? Why do children die? Why do young married people suddenly become ill and leave behind the spouse and children? There often seems to be no rhyme or reason in the way Hashem runs the world. That's not my quote. If you have the sefer, it's Rav Yisachar Frand, The Power of Avar, article Masara, page 224. I'm not making up a word. There are certain times in our lives when we just cannot understand why certain things happen in this world. Why do some people suffer so much while others seem to cruise effortlessly through their lives? Why do children die? Why do young married people suddenly become ill and leave behind a spouse and a young family? There often seems to be no rhyme or reason in the way Hashem runs the world. That's a quote. And if these questions bother us when we see other suffering, how much more so when we face difficulty in our own lives? These enigmas seem to be magnified exponentially. And this is in italics. Why do I have to suffer so much? What have I done to suffer so much? We think to ourselves. The concept of Gilgulim, transmigration of the soul, can help us make some sense of what happens in this world. It teaches us whatever we experience in our relatively short stay in this world, in our current body, is part of a much larger picture that we are not privy to. The insight's even longer. I'm not going to continue to quote the whole thing for tonight's year, but that's the part that I wanted to just bring out for this year. That and it's funny because the author of the Sefer mentions the Gilgulim, and he says if we could see life from the previous Gilgul and the previous Gilgul before that and the previous Gilgul before that, maybe we'd have a whole picture. Now I understand why the Neshama had to go through in this specific journey that specific suffering. It has something to do with the previous life that was not masaking, that was not rectified, but we don't see the previous Gilgul. I have no idea. It's such a strange concept. Where was my Neshama before it was in me? It's very strange. We don't know. So because we can't see, because our vision is so limited, and we don't see, we don't have a bigger picture, and therefore we do not understand. Because he mentions Gilgulim, it reminded me of Rav Yisachar Frand, which I learned and taught last week, and also reminded me of an insight I just heard yesterday. Yesterday was Shavuos, and I just heard the following insight yesterday. I went to a shir at the Young Israel Hood Miras the afternoon by Rabbi Daniel Gottstein. Apparently my daughter says I say his last name wrong. I don't mean distractly. I don't know. I'll show you how to pronounce it. It's my error if I'm saying it wrong. Rabbi Daniel Gottstein, he is a very well-known Magid Shir, Talmid Chacham, and Mechaber Sfarim. Anyway, at the end of his shir, his very last insight, it was on Megillas Rus. Gilgal is transmigration of the soul. I didn't say that. I thought I said that. I want to make sure everyone understands. Gilgal is the reincarnation, the transmigration of the soul from one body to another body. Okay? So, at the end of Megillas, this was the final insight with which he ended his shir. At the end of Megillas Rus and Boaz, I know Shavuos is over, but Tanakh is timeless, so it's no problem to learn this tonight. Okay, Rus and Boaz are together for one night. At the point of the story, Boaz is 80 and Rus is 40. And after that one night of being together, he dies. She is, however, left with a child. Okay, so let's see what happens. Okay. Vayikach Boaz is Rus. This is the very end of the Megillah. Boaz took Rus. Vatihilo the Isha. She was to him a wife. Vayavo Elai. He came to her. Why so much redundancy? He took Rus. She was to him a wife. He came to her, which in the biblical sense means he knew her. So the Midrash says she was really a barren woman. She did not have the ability to conceive. Not only did she become his wife, Vayavo Elaha, she was granted the ability miraculously to conceive a child. Vayitain Hashem La Herayon. God gave her pregnancy. Vatelid Ben. She gave birth to a son. And after she gives birth, you don't hear anything else about Rus. The story is not about Rus anymore. The story is now about Naomi. Vatomarna hanashim el Naomi. The woman of the town say to Naomi, Baruch Hashem, wow, asher lo hishpis lach goel, who did not cause to hishpis, Shavat is to cease. God did not hold back from you the Redeemer today, and his name should be called in Israel, and he should restore your soul, and to give you satiation, because your daughter-in-law, who you love, gave birth, and she is wonderful for you from seven sons. And Naomi took the child, Vatikach Naomi, with Yibum, the child has the soul of Machlon. I'm talking about transmigration of the souls. The child has the soul of Machlon, Rus's husband who died. Vatikach Naomi is hayalad, and she takes the child and she puts it in her lap and she becomes the nursemaid to the child. Vatikra'ena lo hashcheino shem. Who names the child? You might think it's Naomi. Naomi has taken the child. It's a child to her, the first child of Boaz to Rus. There's not going to be another child because Boaz died. But the first child to Boaz and Rus belongs to the deceased Machlon. So it is Naomi's child through Yibam. But why doesn't Naomi name the child? The neighbors name the child that to Kuenelo Hashchino Shame, and the neighbors called him a name. Lamor, Yulad Ben La Naomi, a son has been born to Naomi, but to Kuenashmo Oved. His name is Oved, who Avi Yishai, Avi David. Oved is the father of Yishai, the father of David, the great-grandfather of Malach HaMashiach. So he quoted the Chidah, Rabbi Daniel Gottstein. This was his final insight of the Shir. He quoted the Chidah. The Chidah says something very interesting. Rus was a Gilgal of the Bechira. Remember the cave? Chapter 19 in Bereishis. After Lot escapes from Sodom, his wife turns around and becomes a pillar of salt. His sons-in-law are mocking him and they think he's crazy. What do you mean? Sodom and Gomorrah are going to be destroyed. We've lived here forever and this is a wonderful place. They make fun of him. His wife turns around and becomes salt and he ends up in a cave in Perek Yud Tas of Bereishis with his two daughters. They're known as the Bechira, the eldest daughter, and the Tzi'ira, the youngest daughter. The Bechira, her intentions were L'shem Shemayim, says of Salvechik. You know, I gave a shir yesterday afternoon on Megillas Rus, before I went to Rabbi Gottstein earlier in the afternoon. So someone came over to me, she said, I know this wasn't the topic of your shir, but I'm just wondering, why does Mashiach have to come from a Moaviyah like Rus? So I said, that is a whole other shir. I said, why does Mashiach need to come from Tamar and Yehuda, who dressed up like a Zona? Why doesn't the Shiach need to come from Lot and his daughters in a cave in a relationship that looks like incest? I said, you know, Al Raga Achas, this is a whole other Shir. But yes, it seems to be a little dubious. So what happens in the cave? The Bechira, the eldest daughter, says, you know, there's no one left in the world. We better sleep with father and establish seed or the world will be destroyed. You know, it's the days before WhatsApp. They can't say, you know, I'm in the cave. We survived. Is anyone else out there? They think the whole world has been destroyed. So there's wine prepared in the cave. Hashem prepared wine in the cave. So clearly Hashem was masking. By the way, if Hashem wasn't masking, if he didn't agree to this, Mashiach would not be born from this union. And the Bechira sleeps with her father. The next night she says to her younger sister, you know, you do the same thing. They give him wine again. Rashi says this time he knew what was going to happen, but he didn't stop it. They both have child. The Bechira calls her son Moav. That's the great-grandfather of Rus. And the Tzi'ira calls her son Amon. My nation, Amon, Am. But the Bechira is taken to task. She wasn't Sanua. She publicized for the whole world that this child was born, out of a union with her father, relations with her father. May Av. He was born Av, Abba. He was born from my father. So the Bechira, even though she intended L'shem Shemayim, and clearly Hashem was maskim, agreed, because there was wine in the cave, so they could give their father wine, so he would become drunk, so he would sleep with his daughters, and the child would be born, Moav, and Moav eventually is Eglon, and Eglon has Rus, and Rus gets married to Boaz after conversion, and we're going to have Mashiach one day, but Be'ezrat Hashem, it should be very soon. Nevertheless, there was a tikkun that the neshama of the Bechira needed. Says Rabbi Glatstein, quoting the Chidah, the tikkun was that she lacked a little bit of tznius. Now, you would think that tznius was in the fact that she had relations with her father. No, that wasn't the part that needed a tikkun. It's that she named him Moav. In the naming of the child, she was not tsanua. Her younger sister named Amon. That's a hidden name. Nobody knows when you say Amon that the child came from his father. But when you say Moav, every time someone says, oh, such a cute little kid, what's his name, Moav? They think, oh my God, Moav, you know, where she was impregnated by her own father. So she needed a tikkun. She wasn't Sanua when she named the child. So her soul came back into the soul of, into the body of Rus, who was also from Moav, by the way. Okay, that was the Bechira who had Moav. Her soul came back in Rus, the Moavit. And how was Rus misaking the failing of her great-grandmother, if you will, the Bechira? Rus did not have anything to do with the naming of the child. The naming is done by the neighbors. She totally removes herself. She self-negates, unlike the Bechira, who is proud to say Moav. And this is a tikkun for the soul of the Bechira, the eldest daughter who slept with her own father, Lot, who names her child Moav. She's not embarrassed to say, he is from my father. The soul comes back in Rus. That's one of the Gilgals of that Neshamos. And Rus has a child to be misakin, to fix the failing of the soul. The first time around, she completely removes herself. She does not name this child. Only the Shechenos name this child. So I thought that that was extremely interesting. I never heard that before. I was also thinking after he spoke about this, that perhaps the Shechenos is a reference to the Shechina, because we know that the Shechina was totally maskim to all these relationships. Perek Yutas, the two daughters with Lot. Perek Lamed Ches, Yehuda with Tamar, also a seemingly very inappropriate situation. And here in Megillas Rus, Boaz Rus, the granary, nighttime uncovering his feet. Oh my God, I thought you just converted under the premise that you're not allowed to sleep in certain places and with certain people. Okay, but Hashem was maskim to all this. Of course, there's much deeper learning on all of these levels, but I thought it was very interesting. But to Kru'enelo Hashchenos Shem, Lemor. The neighbors called him a name, but Shechenos, of course, we don't know words in Tanakh are superfluous or an accident. Shechenos is also the word of Shechina, because why all of a sudden are the neighbors having a role here? Because before they're called the woman. Batomarna hanashim al na'ami. The women say to Na'ami. But here you have them appear as the Shechenos, which I found to be very interesting. Perhaps before that we don't see the Shechenos. We see the men in the gate. He has the witnesses. Here the Shechenos make an appearance when it comes to naming the child. Perhaps it is the Shechina who is naming the child, who is declaring through some sort of bas kol, Yulad ben Lena'ami. The Shechina says, I am maskim. A child has been born to Na'ami. It's the reincarnation of Machlon, the deceased husband, that Tekru'enishmo Oved. And then they call him Oved. But it's the Shechina who declares a child has been born to Na'ami. If that's wrong, that's not Rabbi Daniel Glatzin. I just thought of that on my own. So yes, it could be wrong. He told over in the name of the Chidah. I just want to distinguish between the two points so no one should quote him in case that's not a correct insight. Please. He told over in the name of the Chidah that Rus is a reincarnation of the Bechira, the eldest daughter. And in naming and in not naming the child, she is rectifying the mistake, the ansanua mistake of her foremother who named the child Moav. I thought that was very interesting. So all of that was because our Sefer just quoted the concept of Gilgulim. So we went to Rabbi Fraun, Kol Zechar L'Gulgul Osam, Moshe Rabbeinu, suffering. We can't understand it from our perspective, but Moshe saw every reincarnation of every soul, and we had very nice insights into Megillas Rus. With now we go back to the Sefer. Okay, remember the example is the child who's very hot and he's sweaty, and today, oh my gosh, I turned off my heat last week, and today it's like very warm, and my gosh, do we already need the air condition? Okay, so the child's hot, and he sees bleach, and he wants to drink the bleach, or Windex, and it looks like, I don't know, fruit punch, and now he wants to drink the Windex. So the father pulls him away, and the child's crying, but of course, you know that the father did a good thing. The father saved the child's life by pulling something away from the child. So the author says, if we would know all the details, if you could see from the perspective of previous Gilgulim, the previous manifestations of your soul in different bodies throughout history, you could understand. New paragraph. We presume Hashem's kindness is understandable to the human mind, except that we don't see it because we lack some details. So that's what we presume. If we could see all the details, I would understand that Hashem's kindness is understandable to the human mind. We know we don't have all the details. We understand, just as we understand kindness when we see the final details, so too, even when we don't see the details, there must be kindness involved. So what he's saying is very true. We think if we could only see all the details, then the whole picture would make sense. Just like I'm kind, Hashem is kind. So if I could see the whole picture, I would understand that Hashem is kind. I'm going to quote from Mishpacha, the Shavuos edition of Mishpacha. There was stories of the traveling Shochet. If anyone read it, it was really, really nice. Rabbi Yechiel Shmuel Fried has been a Shochet for, maybe some of you know him, I don't know, very many years, decades, I should say. And in some of his Hashkacha Pratis stories, he travels all over and meets different people. And it was very nice. So this is one interesting story where you see all the details and you just see Hashem's kindness. Okay? So we think if we could just see the details, we would understand that Hashem's kindness and how it works. Okay. Mordechai, 2012, New Jersey Turnpike. Okay. Mordechai, Alabavitcher Chassid, and I would make our way up north every Sunday. He was in New Jersey, I was in New York, and since I don't drive, my son-in-law would drive me to a certain rest area near Passaic, where the Chabadnik would pick me up. Together, we would continue on the way to Baltimore. It was a bustling rest area, a pivotal stop on the New Jersey Turnpike, with stores and eateries and hundreds of parked cars. Until October 2012, when Hurricane Sandy struck. The building was left flooded and waterlogged. The parking lot was in shambles. Still, it was the best place for me to meet Mordechai. So somewhat worriedly, my son-in-law dropped me off there a few weeks post-Sandy. Mordechai showed up, and off we went. We did our thing, and a few days later, we went back. My son-in-law was going to pick me up from the same rest area, but he called to say he was delayed by half an hour. Mordechai wasn't going to leave me in the desolate place alone. He parked in the rubble. I took out my Rabbeinu Tam tefillin. I hadn't yet had a chance to put them on that day. So I guess he davened with them in the morning with his regular rash tefillin. Now he's putting on the Rabbeinu Tam tefillin. I'm standing there donning my tefillin against a destroyed landscape. Sounds like Lahavdil, the story about the daughters who think the whole world is destroyed. The place looks, quote, God-forsaken. He literally writes that. The place looks God-forsaken. The debris of stores all around. Deathly silent. A few weeks ago, it was hopping with people. Suddenly, a young man streaks out of a car and rushes over to me. He has wild hair. Ripped jeans. He looks punky, strange. I'm just quoting the language he used. He points at my arm and he says, tefillin. What? This guy hardly looks like a person, much less a Jew. And stranger still, he burst out, I haven't put those on since. Rabbi, please, will you put them on for me? I start to wind the straps around his arm. I feel the goosebumps forming on his hand. He starts to close his eyes and pray. I look at him. Of course he's a person. Of course he's a Jew. When he's done, he says to me, what are you doing here? Fair question. There's no gas station here. There's no stores. Everything has been destroyed. Nothing is here. What are you doing here? Reminds me of Rabbi Akiva. Why are you crying? Why are you laughing? He holds out his arms. I have no idea. No idea why I'm here. He shakes his head. I was driving along the freeway, and just like that, this exhaustion came over me. I took the first exit I saw. I'd been sleeping in my car for what? He looks at his watch. 2 hours. And when you guys pulled in, you must have woken me up. We look at each other, the most unlikely of pairs, standing together, holding together a pair of tefillin in a parking lot that is ravaged, but not forsaken. My son-in-law pulls up half an hour late, which is not like him. I shake the young man's hand and I lead him over to Mordechai's car. You're the Chabadnik, I tell Mordechai, but it looks like I'm the Shaliach. We laugh, but Mordechai's on it. He takes the guy's number, he pulls out a card. We get into our respective cars, we pull away, and my son-in-law begins to apologize for being a half an hour late. I wave away his apology. Have I got a story for you, I say. And that's how he ends that particular story. It was really a very interesting supplement. So we think if you see all the details, you know why the rest stop was inundated with water, and you know why your son-in-law was late, and you know why you had to come exactly at this time, not a half hour earlier, a half hour later, exactly on this day when this guy who looks like a punk hasn't put on tefillin since he doesn't even know when, maybe his bar mitzvah. And when you start to see all the details, you understand Hashem's kindness. So that's what we think. We think if only we could see all the details, then we would understand Hashem's kindness. But, and here the author brings up such a good point. In the current example, the point is much deeper. Even if the father would sit with, listen carefully, even if the father would sit with the infant for 3 days and three nights, the child, the little boy who goes over and wants to drink the bleach, the father will not be able to explain to him why he can't drink the bleach. The child cannot understand. Okay, well, he used the example of a two-year-old, but let's say, I think a two-year-old might be able to understand. Let's say it's a 9-month-old, 10-month-old baby who's already starting to crawl. I think that's a better example, okay? He crawls over and he finds this blue, delicious-looking liquid, or this yellow, or the bright purple. I don't know, they sell in Costco, like whatever it's called. There's flowers on the label for floor cleaner. So you could sit from today to tomorrow with your 10-month-old and explain that it has poison and it's bad for you. And if you drink, you need to go to the hospital and they have to pump your stomach and could shut down your organs. Child's not going to understand anything. We could sit for 3 days and three nights and you cannot explain to your child why you cannot drink the bleach. The child cannot understand. In my own book, I underlined that sentence, double underlined, red pen. I don't know if you could see when I was preparing. Three times. The child cannot understand because I found this to be a very profound example. We think if only we could see the big picture, we would understand. But even sometimes Hashem reveals the big picture, like the father reveals it to the 10-month-old, and we still cannot understand. Just like you can't explain to a 10-year-old that bleach is poison. The problem is not that the child doesn't have enough information. The child has plenty of information. You read him the warning. You showed him it's poison. You showed him, you know, the skull and crossbones. You told him, does he want to go to the doctor? The child still doesn't understand. You gave him all the information. So what's the problem? The problem is that he cannot comprehend. More information will not help. This is really powerful. I said that in the beginning. And sometimes I have struggled with different topics in the Sefer or the way that perhaps it's the English translation out of the Hebrew. We've Baruch Hashem gotten through it all with many, many insights, but this really speaks to me. We erroneously believe that if we had all the information, we would understand Hashem's kindness. But since we accept that we're missing information, we don't understand Hashem's kindness. You're the Mechaber saying something much deeper. Even if you had all the information, your thoughts are not my thoughts. I could give you the whole picture. I could give you a whole speech on why bleach is bad. But you're 9.5 months old and you don't understand why bleach is bad. It's not that you don't have information. Your mind cannot comprehend. The problem is he cannot comprehend. More information will not help. If the father tries to explain that the bleach has a certain constitution, the body is a certain constitution, the bleach will harm the body's internal organs, the child will not grasp what the father wants from him. The child is a baby. By considering the meaning behind this example, we can attain a much greater appreciation of Hashem's kindness. Normally, a person looks at things from his own perspective. For example, Hashem gives someone a large amount of money. He can purchase a car with it. He thinks, wow, this gift is certainly a kindness, so much money. Is so much money really a kindness? It depends. But you look at it from your perspective and you think, wow, this is a great kindness. It'll be easier for me to travel. I won't get headaches. So you look at money and you say, this is a great blessing. And I guess because Shavuos was just over, I just taught Erev Shavuos a 5-week, 5-part series on Megillas Rus. I spoke yesterday on Megillas Rus. I went to a shir last night by Rabbi Daniel Glatzin on Megillas Rus. I'm going to go with you through a Malbim that I taught last year. Did anyone learn my Megillas Rus series with me? Not this year, but the year before. So the year before we started at the beginning, this year we start in the middle where we left off. So we're going to go back to Perek Aleph of Megillas Rus, okay? And I want to look at a Malbim that relates very much to what we have just learned in the Sefer, that sometimes riches look like kindness to us. I could buy a car, I won't have a headache, it'll be easier for me to travel. This is such a kindness of Hashem. Naomi was married to Elimelech, who was very, very wealthy, Machlon and Kilion. They leave Beis Lechem Yehuda. They go to the fields of Moab. They stay there like 10 years. In the interim, they've married Moabi daughters. And she is now Moabi daughters-in-law. Machlon, Elimelech dies. All the flocks die. Machlon and Kilion die. She's left alone with these two daughters-in-law. She convinces Orpah to go home, and Rus comes with her. When they get back into town, okay, the manager says she left with chariots. Now she comes back barefoot. Something I learned new this year, I didn't even know. They didn't even have shoes when they were walking back from the fields of Moab to Beis Lechem Yehuda. They were barefoot. Vateilachna shtehem, when it says vateilachna, Perek Aleph, Pasuk Yotes, when it says, and they walked, lalechet, they were so poor, they didn't even have shoes. She left with flocks, now she comes back barefoot. She left with horses and riders and chariots and servants, and now she's bereft. She left with a husband and two children, and now she comes back with this Moabi girl. She has nothing. Vateilachna shtehem ad boana Beis Lechem. And they go, the two of them, barefoot, till they come to Beis Lechem. They've left the fields of Moab. Vayihi kivo ana Beis Lechem. And when they come to Beis Lechem, vatehom kol ha'ir. My gosh, Alehin. Everyone is astonished about them. Vatomarna hazod na'ami. I can't imagine. Is this Naomi? Vatomar Alein, and she says to them, Perak al Pasuchof. We learned this Malbim last year, if anyone's in my series last year. Al tikra ana li Naomi. Do not call me Naomi, which means pleasant. Kir ana li mara. Call me bitter. Ki heimar shakai li ma'od. God has dealt very bitterly with me. Ani malaya halachti. I went full. The reikam hashivani Hashem. God returned me empty. Lama sikra ana li na'ami. Why are you calling me na'ami? Which means ni'imut, pleasantness. Vahashem anabi v'shakai hirali. God testified against me and shakai did bad to me. Don't call me na'ami. Call me mara, which means bitter. So I'm going to screen share. I prepared the Malbim on a sheet for you so that you could see it. Could you see my screen? Yes, thank you. Oh, you know what? I should make it bigger. I like to make it bigger for you. Sorry. That's just the font size I work with. Okay, here we go. Matomer Alein. So the last thing we read in the Sefer is a person looks at everything from his own perspective. For example, Hashem gives you a large amount of money and you think this is great. This is certainly a kindness. Is it really a kindness? Is it always a kindness? Depends, of course, how you use it, how your Yetzer Hara is. Okay. Do not call me Naomi, call me bitter. Okay, let's look at the Malbim here. I'm going to read it and translate it. Vatomar Alehen al Sikruana li Naomi. Hine ish shahayelo osher gadol, she'ein kamohu, ka'osho sha'achashrevus. You have a man who is so rich. There's no one as rich like him. Like, he was as rich as Achashverosh. With his pillars and his marble and his gold and his silver. Guy's so rich, he's rich like Achashverosh. Va'avad kol ashro. He loses all his money, all his wealth. Vilonish arbiyodo rak aleph zahuvim. But he's left with 1,000 pieces of gold. V'nemar alav, you would say about him, shenis dal minichasav. He became impoverished, Dal the Avin, he became impoverished from his possessions. Vinasa ani, he became poor. So in other words, if you see something and again, we're not talking about today. I don't know how much today 1,000 pieces of gold is worth. But again, we're talking about the days of Rus. The Malbim saying he's going to talk about Naomi in a minute. Okay, if someone was very rich like Achashverosh, now he became poor. He's a dal. He's a pauper. But he still has 1,000 pieces of gold. Lo nuchalo marzo rak im nazkir arach asho hakodem. You can't say, oh, he's poor, if he has 1,000 pieces of gold, unless you say he used to be rich like Bill Gates. Now Nabuch is 1,000 pieces of gold, then you could understand. If you tell me he was rich like Bill Gates, and now you tell me he has 1,000 pieces of gold, so you understand he's talking about poor guy. If you just tell me he has 1,000 pieces of gold, I would want 1,000 pieces of gold. That's not poor. In other words, it's relative, says Malbim. You have to know about his previous wealth to know that 1,000 pieces of gold is not a lot of money for Bill Gates. Shelefi ha'osher ha'gadol shahayolo tichila hu ata anividal. According to, subjectively, relatively speaking, comparing to the great wealth that he had before, he is now a poor, impoverished person. If you don't mention the vastness of his wealth, hakodem, that he used to have, isn't it true that normally a person who has 1,000 pieces of gold is considered a rich person? So you, what do you mean? My friend, he has 1,000 pieces of gold, he's poor. Everyone would think you're crazy, but if you say he used to be Bill Gates, and he used to be like Bill Gates, I should say, and now he has 1,000 pieces of gold, you would understand that he's a poor person. But if this rich man lost all of his possessions, nothing is left. He doesn't have a penny, never mind 1,000 silver pieces of gold. Af pruta achas, upas lechem, he is nothing. Lahashki ravano, to satiate his hunger. As nucha lechanaso b'shem ani ve'avion, af shalom nazkir archa kodem. But if you see someone who doesn't even have a penny, doesn't have a groschen, he doesn't even have, what are they called in Israel, shekel, what's the other thing called? I haven't been to Israel, you could see 2 years. Agura. He doesn't even have an agura. He doesn't even have a groschen. He doesn't even have a penny. He doesn't even have bread to satiate his hunger. You don't need to say, relatively speaking, he's poor. Objectively, the guy is poor. He has no money. He has no food. He has nothing. So there's two kinds of poverty. One, says the Ma'amim, is subjective to how much money he had before. If someone was like Achashverosh or like Bill Gates, and now he has 1,000 gold coins, so Nebuch, he's poor. Otherwise, he's not poor if you don't mention how rich he was before. But if someone is taka, adalva evyon, aniva evyon in his language, poor and destitute, he doesn't even have a penny. He doesn't have bread to satiate his hunger. You don't need to say he was like Bill Gates before. You could just say, look at him, Nebuchadnezzar, he has nothing to eat. Everyone knows that he's poor. What does this have to do with Naomi? Vihine anshe ha'ir bir osam. And behold, the people of the city, when they saw, kiva'a raglaihi, she comes here, on her feet, the kalasa and her darona, the ain ish etain itan lesharesos, and there's no man to serve them. Patriarchal dominate society. Women cannot travel by themselves. I'm not making fun of anyone. I don't like to travel by myself either. And there's no man to take care of them and to serve them. Yadusha avdu esa osher. They knew that she lost her entire wealth. Shahayalahen, that she had previously mikodem before. Ubechol zechashvu she'od nishar la zahav v'tachshitin. But still they thought she was Naomi. There must be some gold left. There must be some jewelry left. I mean, she was Bill Gates. Did she literally lose every single dollar? How much is he worth? Millions? Billions? I mean, she must have something left. Okay, Naomi, you think you're so poor? I wish I was poor like you, Naomi. You're Mrs. used to be Bill Gates. I wish I was poor like you. They think she must have something left. She must have some jewelry. She must have some diamonds. She must have some gold somewhere. I mean, she wasn't regular rich. She was Achashverosh rich. Al kein amru, and therefore they said, Shasibas hamitim vati ho hum nam, hu hazo Naomi. The reason for their astonishment and their shock is this Naomi. Shabazah his kiru archa hakodem. When they say her name Naomi, what they're saying is this Achashverosh? Is this used to be Mrs. Bill Gates? Rotzalamar shalafi oshram mekodem hine yarda pelim. They mean to say, oh, it's Naomi. She's only poor for Achashverosh poor. She's only poor for former Bill Gates poor. Hazo Naomi, we know she must have jewelry hidden somewhere. It's not possible that she lost every single golden coin, every piece of jewelry. Vitomar elehen, and she says, Hodia lahem, she informs them, Shalo kasher yechashvuhem, it's not what they think. Shei efshar lekala b'shem mara, rak im yizkiru shma hakodem. They think they can't call her Mara, bitter, unless they mention how great she was before. Yeah, you're bitter, but it's relative to what you had. So instead of having $1 billion, you have $1,000. Nebuch, I feel bad for you. I would be happy to have $1,000. That's what they think. They have to mention that she was Naomi. They have to mention she was rich like Achashverosh. Shemi kodem haisa nekreis Naomi. Before she was Mrs. Rich. Shalafi orach ma shahaya shema Naomi. According to her value, she was called Naomi. According to value, you're called Bill Gates. According to your value, you're called Achashverosh. Al shem rov ashra ra'ui lekrala mara. So they think we could only call you bitter compared to how much you have. Now you have like Nebuch, but anyone else in the town, says the Malbim, would be an Ashir Samech Bechalko. Right here he said it. To have what you have. Ki yarda mi madre gasa. She went down from her level. Amra. She ain't sarich klal la hazkir ma'amda hakodem. She says, you're wrong. You don't need to mention my previous stature. Ki hi ata aniya kol kach ad shelo nishar biadam me'uma. She says, I'm so poor. You think I have jewels hidden somewhere? You think I have 1,000 pieces of gold somewhere? You think I have some diamonds and gems? You think I have, you know, $100,000. So if you were like Bill Gates, you had how many billions? 30 billion? I don't know what the number is. And now you have $100,000, so you're poor. If I had $100,000, I would be very happy. It's relative. Naomi says, you don't have to call me Naomi. Forget name dropping. Forget who I was. I'm not subjectively poor. I am objectively destitute. I have nothing. How do you know? She was so poor that her daughter-in-law needs to go do lekat amongst the poor, get the gleanings from the poor people. You could just call me Mara. You don't need to mention that I was Naomi. Don't mention that I was Mrs. Bill Gates. Don't mention I was Vashti. I'm so poor, you don't even need to say Hazot Naomi. Don't call me Naomi. You could just say Mara, objectively. I am destitute. I'm an Ani. I'm an Avion. I don't even have anything to eat. You think I have gems? You think I have jewels? You think I used to have 30 billion, now I had 100,000? I don't even have money. My daughter wants to go get some barley corns from the field with the poor people. You don't need to call me Naomi. Don't mention my former name. I am objectively poor. You don't even mention my previous name. There's no name dropping. I have nothing. It's not subjective poverty. It's abject, total, objective poverty. And that's what she says, don't even bother with my previous name. You don't even need to call me Naomi anymore. Don't call me Pleasant. Objective poverty. You don't need to mention my name. You don't need to mention my prestige. You don't need to mention my previous reputation. You don't need to mention my previous wealth. Because Hashem has dealt very bitterly with me. So again, I think it's because I'm just coming off of 5 weeks of teaching Rus and Shavuos. I presented on Rus and I heard a shir on Rus. But that's what I read when I read this paragraph, which is the last paragraph we did in tonight's shir. When Hashem gives a person a large amount of money, he thinks this is a kindness, this is great. But life is a wheel and we don't see the big picture. And what was so amazing for her in the beginning was all taken away from her. But again, we don't know the whole picture. We're like that child. So we can't understand why people suffer. We can't understand why someone is so rich and now they're so poor. We can't understand. 1 second. Yeah. Naomi's proof, says Nancy, that riches won't necessarily last forever and it's pointless to be jealous of one another. Lo tachma, the 10th of the 10 commandments that we read, thou shalt not covet. That's certainly true. And it's a strong lesson and something that perhaps we all need to, maybe not you, me, everyone needs to work on the midah of being a sameach b'chalko. But when a person has wealth, they have to recognize it's from the Ribbono Shel Olam. But you also have to know you're not seeing the big picture. With every single thing in life, we're not seeing the big picture. We don't know where the first Gilgal was. We don't know why people suffer. We don't know why someone who's blessed now has the blessing taken away from them. We just don't see the big picture. But the point of tonight's year, even though we had many other nekudos of learning, is that even if you did see the whole picture, you still would not be able to understand. It's like a father trying to explain to his 9-month-old why something happens. You could give him all the information and he still won't understand. That's our chachma, our limited, finite, teeny, teeny chachma compared to the chachma of the Ein Sof, the God who is infinite, the Yodea HaKol, the Kol Yacha. We can never ultimately understand any of Hashem's cheshbonos. And I think this helps put the difficulties of life in perspective. It's not, oh Hashem, if you give me the big picture, I'll understand. As long as my neshama is in this mortal body, I am trapped by the limitations of mortality. And even if you have all the information, lo machshavosei machshavosainu Hashem, you still cannot understand the ways of Hashem. We will, be'ezrat Hashem, continue. We should be well next week. The neshama of Miriam Fron, Miriam Bas Chaim Yitzchak, Allah Hashem, should merit continuously in the schus of this Torah. I thank you so much for joining. I wish you a healthy week of Besuros Tovos. Kol Tov to all. Thank you so much. Kol Tov. Thank you. And a good Shabbos. Thank you.